Loving God, source of all we are and all we might yet be, send your Spirit into this place that we may hear these ancient words with new hearts. And may the words of my mouth and the meditations of each and every one of our hearts be acceptable to you, O Lord, our rock and our Redeemer. Amen. Names matter. What we call someone or something matters. In the early 1900s, when the communist movement was gaining momentum, there was a large gathering at which there was significant disagreement. Many votes were taken. Truth be told, those votes were split pretty evenly down the middle, and yet one group came out of that conference, and they called themselves the Bolsheviks. Now, if you don't know Russian, think of Bolshoi Theater, grand, big, bigger. The Bolsheviks came out claiming that they were the grander, the bigger party. The other group, they were known as the Mensheviks, which both doesn't sound nearly as good and actually means smaller, diminutive, lesser. Can you imagine which way those parties ended up going? Would you vote for the Bolsheviks or the Mensheviks? Then again, later in the 20th century, General Motors had this great idea. They had this really wonderful little car, you see. It was economical, it was durable, and Latin America was an opening market. So they picked this car to send to Latin America. It had a great name. That name in English, it meant that moment when a star burns brighter. It meant that moment when a star flared before going back to its original state. That name is Nova. In Latin America, in Spanish, though, Nova doesn't so much elicit ideas of stars. It literally means no go, no run. Surprisingly, very few people bought a car that was promised not to run. So this parable that Jim just read, what is the name of that parable? Not a rhetorical question. The prodigal son. Names matter. Would you be shocked to know that nowhere in the script of Luke does it call this story the prodigal son? We call it the prodigal son. And remember from last week, we get a little nervous when we talk about parables because we want to wrap them up nice and neat and tidy and put them away and take some little teaching from it. But parables, by definition, are designed to break things open. So which of the two boys was the prodigal son? Maybe we should start first with, what does that word mean anyway? What does prodigal mean? The name of the son in Luke? In Luke's parable? No, prodigal means something. Anybody want to take a bold guess? Yes. Extravagant. Yes, and. It means extravagant. It means spending in a wasteful and extravagant way. It means generosity that is totally over the top and ridiculous. Prodigal, wasteful spending. It focuses our story, first of all, immediately on the younger son. And then secondly, it focuses on what he does, which is to run off and do all of that dissolute living, right? That living that we generally don't talk about in church. We focus on the aspect of what happens once he's already left. But Henry Nouwen wants to turn our attention far earlier. He would rename this parable. He wants us to look first at the moment when that young man decided to leave. Oh, there is the insult of basically saying to your father, you know that money that you were going to give me when you die? How about you just give it to me now? Right? Not exactly the nicest thing to say to dad. Right? And yet, what does dad do? here you go. All of it right here. Not caring a whit bit of what the neighbors might think, not caring at all except allowing his son to make this choice. And the young man can't wait to leave, can't wait to get away from home, maybe to find himself, maybe to seek out the world, to have great adventures, but to go away. See, Nauman doesn't think that the most painful part of this story is actually the demand for the inheritance. Not telling Dad, you know, Dad, I kind of wish you were already dead. Give me the money so I can go and play. Not even the fact that this young man wants to get out and break some rules and live for a while. But instead, the fact that this young man felt like he didn't already have a home. That he had to somehow leave in order to find that home. Because you see, home is where the heart is. Home is where safety and security is. We call this God's house, this sanctuary, because here we find light and life and truth and beauty. Home is where the doors are flung open and we are lovingly welcomed into family. Where we can hear the whisper of being the beloved and where we can shout the goodness of God. I wonder how this parable might be changed if it was called the parable of the son who left. We might focus on this tragedy of going far and wide to look for a home when indeed we already have one. The tragedy that this world so often induces us to spend money lavishly on strangers in hopes that they might become friends or family when they're all sitting right next to you. I want you to take a moment and look around in this room for a second. Look into the faces of people. Go ahead and do it. It's okay. These are people who, despite all odds, despite all allures of the world, show up this morning to be your family and to dwell with you in your home. Names matter. I wonder if we called this the parable of the son who left. And yet, then again, if we look at this parable, there is another child of that father who was so generous, another child who left home and didn't come back. No, not the younger one, not the one who threw all the money to the wind, the prodigal one, but rather the older one, the one that stayed home, the one that he too left the house every single day and came home again. Every day, that young man left to go out into his father's fields to work, to supervise, to do the things with which he was charged, as the eldest of that time did. He was put in charge of a great many things, and I have to imagine that on the first days when he left, when he was finally old enough to live into this, how that felt so amazing. New things to discover, new jobs, new responsibilities. I bet that in the beginning days, he couldn't wait to get home to tell his dad everything that had happened. I bet that coming home was the favorite part of every day. I wonder, though, when all of that turned somehow from joy and privilege to duty and responsibility, when the daily tasks that once seemed so fresh and new and life-giving, those tasks at which he was so good and for which he probably received great praise, ceased being new adventures every day and instead turned into measuring sticks to live up to. When the cloak of the eldest, that mantle that was placed upon his shoulder, that he was so overjoyed to pick up in the beginning, suddenly became a burden pressing in on all sides. For while there is no question in this story that the younger son left home and got lost, there is no question that the older son did too. And I wonder sometimes, for those of us who are here on Sunday mornings, who have resisted the temptations of the world to show up in a place as high and holy as this, if it might not be a little bit tempting to want to focus on the prodigal son. I don't know about you, but I was a straight-laced little kid growing up. I've never smoked a cigarette in my life. I didn't drink until I was 21, and everybody knew it. And sometimes I wonder what it would have been like and whether it would have been better for me to have gotten out and shaken it up a little bit. Maybe I'll try that here. Just kidding. But there is a temptation to be drawn to this story of the prodigal son, I think, for two reasons. One is that there is this envy of those who find such joy in life, even if it's headed in a dead end and wrong direction. But the second reason, I think, is sometimes it makes us say, well, thank God I'm not him. Thank God I'm here doing what I'm supposed to do. I have it all put together. And yet this older son, despite the fact that he was the duteous one, the good one, despite the fact that he was content to wait for that future day when money would be his and he would be able to own the property, he got lost far worse than the younger one did. And it was far harder for him to find himself. There are a couple phrases in this parable we rarely look at that I want to look at very quickly with you. The first is this idea of the younger son coming home. If you'll notice, the phrase is, when he came back to himself. That predates any planning, scheming, or decision of that younger son to come home. When he came back to himself, when he realized that he was the son of this wonderful, loving father, this papa, as Jesus would call him. When he came back to himself, that's what sent him running for home, and he had it all planned out. He was going to beg for forgiveness, and he was going to beg his dad to treat him at least as well as the hired hands. But he never even gets to apologize, right? This father that he left, this dad of whose money he demanded, doesn't even allow the son to spit out the words, "I'm sorry." But instead comes running to him, wraps his arms around him, and wants to celebrate with him. You're home. Welcome home. I love you. So the first phrase I want you to remember for today is coming back to ourselves, the fullness of who we are. The second phrase I want you to notice that I bet you didn't is this older son. There's plenty of reasons why he probably didn't come into that party. I can imagine when he came back, he was wondering in the back of his head, why is dad throwing a party? I'm not even there. I'm doing all this work, and why is dad throwing the party? And he comes across a servant who happens to just tell him, hey, good news, your brother is back. And yet, for this older brother, it's all about doing the right thing. It's all about earning what you've got. It's all about playing into a role until those rewards come. That's a risk of those of us who show up on Sundays, isn't it? That if we just do the right thing, if we just show up, if we behave, if we stay in the rules, if we stay in the bounds, good things are going to happen. Instead of the reality that God invites us to a party every time we come into this place for the goodness that abounds. But what you may not have noticed is that while the son pouted, while he stood outside that tent and refused to come in, it wasn't just the father who ran to the younger son to forgive him. Did you hear the word in this passage that Jim read? The father leaves the party, the place of joy, the place of the fatted calf and all that dancing, and he comes outside. Why? Do you remember? To plead with his son. To plead with that older son, the one who got all caught up in his roles and duties until they stopped being joys and started being burdens, and says, let that go and come in. Come in, for we are celebrating. All that I have is yours. All that I have is yours. Enjoy it now. When Jesus came, he proclaimed a kingdom that had already drawn near, not something we have to earn and wait for, but rather something that is here now. What Henry Nouwen says about this passage is that he feels so bad for that older son because there is nothing that older son can do on his own to come into that party. Instead, there has to be a force bigger than him, greater than him, something that compels him to come forward. And Owen would say those are two things. The first is trust. The reason we come to worship every week is to build that trust, to know that we have a loving God who welcomes us home. And the second is gratitude. To live not just in thanks for a party thrown, but in gratitude that all of life itself is that banquet feast waiting to unfold before us. The SALT Project, a great new contemporary voice for Christianity, raised a critical question in their blog this week. One that asked the question about the order of grace and forgiveness. So often we presume it is that act of forgiveness, that act of saying sorry and getting forgiven, that grace abounds. But they too stood that on its head, and it's compelling to think about. They claim that in this story, instead it's remembering that our God is a graceful God, our God is a loving God, our God is a papa. That knowing that that grace exists invites us into the ability to throw ourselves on the ground for mercy and find forgiveness that has already been extended. So I wonder, since names matter, if instead this parable was named the parable of the loving, pleading, running to forgive parent. How might we read it a little bit different? For the truth is, we are always somewhat of the older and younger brother, but the truth is, this parable invites us to be more like the father. Yesterday, I had a conversation with a wonderful woman who talked about how she named her child, because names matter. She named her child Luke. And I said, oh, that's a nice name. Why did you name him that? She said, well, Luke, after all, means light bringer. And I wanted my son to be a bearer of light in this world. But there's also some indication that Luke might have some ties and might come from the name Lucifer. Yes, that Lucifer. And in the naming of her child, she wanted to acknowledge that that child would both be a human being with all of our foibles and challenges and fears, and also be a bearer of light. Friends, we are beloved children of God. We are saints and sinners at the same time. May this parable, this story, meet you where you are. But more importantly, may it remind you to simply come home. Come home to a loving God. Come home to a loving family. Whatever you do and wherever you are on life's journey, friends, just come home. Amen.